All right, so guess what? Once again, it's going to be Pesach, and as was just pointed out, it's not really that different than last year. But it's always good to review exactly what we need to do, and then that allows people to, I think, enjoy their Yom Tov as much as possible, or at least the lead up to it. And make that a time that we could focus on the things that that are make the most sense to prioritize. So one thing that kind of is the overarching feeling we have about Pesach is that we know that Klal Yisrael, Yisrael Kadoshim Heim, that we're a very holy people. And we take our halacha very seriously. And Pesach is one of those things that we take super seriously. So there are lots of things that may be actual menhagim, may be things that seem like they're menhagim, but they're just things that people have taken on themselves to go that extra mile. And sometimes they're grounded in a real minhag or halacha, sometimes they're not, but that is our sense, and it's something that we imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu appreciates very much. But to know the difference between the needs, what we need to do versus what if we have extra time we can do, that is a chashuv thing. That's an important thing. So the main thing that we do when we prepare ourselves for Pesach is we see to it that we are not going to transgress the isurim, the prohibitions of Pesach. The prohibitions of Pesach involve owning chametz, being in possession of chametz, and consuming chametz. Those are things that we are not allowed to do. Chazal, in creating a structure for us to not transgress these things, instituted different things, and we have different things over the ages that have kind of become part of what we do to make sure that we do not transgress any of those isurim, any of those prohibitions. One thing that we do is bedikas chametz and bir chametz. That is to search for chametz and to destroy chametz. And when we talk about Pesach cleaning, that's really a misnomer. There's no such thing as Pesach cleaning. There is making sure that we get rid of all the chametz in our possession, which is bitikas chametz and bir chametz. So once upon a time, when they had one-room houses, it was just like, hey, you know, like, hey, guess what tonight is? Oh, it's bitikas chametz tonight. All right, let's look around, see if we got anything. If you had any chametz, probably ate it, because you didn't have much anyway. So they didn't have storehouses. They didn't have candies and cookies and things that we run around the house with. They didn't have all of the products that we have nowadays that are full of chametz. They didn't have products. It was just like you just had stuff, you know, whatever stuff you had. It was very basic. So life was simpler in the preparation for Pesach way of going about doing things. Nowadays, Baruch Hashem, we have lots of rooms in our homes. We've got lots of things, lots of food, lots of disposable income, food, stuff that ends up finding its way around different parts of our homes. And therefore, it has become more of a complicated procedure for us to assure that we do not have chametz in our possession and among our stuff. So that's part one. Part one is seeing to it that we don't have that chametz like in our things and in our possession. And number two is making sure that we don't eat chametz, that we don't consume chametz, and that's where sort of kashering and the way we take care of our kitchens, that's where that comes in. So, what Chazal have given us is they've given us this bedikas chametz and bir chametz. They've also given us something that we do, bittul chametz, where we declare all of our chametz to be null and void, ownerless, no longer ours. The Chazal want us to do both things. It's not good enough for a person just to say, I'm mevatel all my chametz, and I consider it all ownerless, and let me just forget about it. Why? Because there's a fear that a person is going to bump into some of that chametz that they declared ownerless. They're going to bump into it in the middle of Yom Tov, and they're going to say like, oh, wait a second, I don't know if I meant that. Even that moment of hesitation of maybe you really do want to keep it, undoes your bittul, and wham, you've just transgressed an issa d'oraisa of owning the chametz. So therefore we say, okay, so let's just get rid of everything. Let's do bedigas chametz, let's search for chametz in our in all of our stuff, and be mavar it, and destroy it, get rid of it. Okay, what if you miss something? What if there's something that you didn't find? Then you might own it. So therefore Chazal said, okay, we have a double layer that, of protection that we can do. So this, what do they call it? Multi-step security solution, right? Speaking of whatever. Security solution, yeah. If somebody wants to get the, it's the top button. Oh, is that Andy? Okay. There we go. Okay. So we have this, it's multi-factor, right? It's the multi-factor security way that we have of doing the bidika. So we search for chametz wherever we can. And then we do bittul also, where we say that it's null and void. And then Chazal gave us a third thing that we have, kind of like an outlier option of mechiras chametz, where we sell chametz, and we say that the stuff that we don't really want to get rid of, that we don't want to get rid of by burning it and getting rid of it, we also don't want to make it absolutely ownerless, so that we have an option of selling to a non-Jew for the duration of Pesach, making it not ours during Pesach, and then we're not transgressing any iser. There are different ways that people utilize mechiras chametz. Some people use it for all forms of chametz. Others use it for only things that are like mixtures of chametz, not what's called chametz gamur, not absolute chametz. There are those people who do not utilize the selling of chametz for full-fledged chametz. There is a minug to sell, to even then be willing to sell schnapps and more expensive forms of chametz that people don't want to have to just, you know, rebuy every year. So that's another option that we have in our toolbox of making sure that we are not transgressing any of the isurim. Mechiras chametz, the selling of chametz, is something that really everybody should take advantage of. There may be things that you do not catch, you don't find, or you don't, you know, search for, or you're not aware that you're fully the owner of. You may not really want to be mevatelet, you may not really want to declare it ownerless, so it just pays to sell it. One thing that came up this year, somebody already asked this question, how Pesach starts on a Monday night, 3 weeks from tonight, for those who are counting. Pesach starts on a Monday night. The garbage is taken on Wednesday. No, what are we going to do? So one of the things that can be done is in the mechira of chametz, in the sale of chametz, aside from there are multiple answers to that question of how having your chametz in a city-owned garbage bin, or we don't have those, I guess, we have our own personal garbage bins, but in those garbage bins, having it out by the curb, can one be mevatel that chametz? Can one declare it ownerless? Yes, that's there's possible for a person to be mafkir that, to make that ownerless. That is something that can be done. But also, what we do, and we actually verbalize this in this way we do the sale of chametz, is we say to the non-Jew, is it okay that we are selling you garbage, quite literally? It is garbage that is in people's dumpsters. And not only that, is it also okay that they give it out, put it out in the street, so that the garbage man is going to come and take it away from you? So that they're going to take you're buying this garbage, and then they're going to take it and, you know, do whatever they do with it. Is that, are you good with that? But that's yours. And he says yes, and it's sold. So that is again another way that using the mechira, using the sale of chametz, is effective in getting rid of chametz from our possession in a way that we keep all of our bases covered. Okay, so now let's talk about going through the house. Going through the house, so we're going to say that the kitchen is going to be one zone, maybe the dining room is going to be one zone, and then there's everything else. It's your basement, it's your attic, it's your top floor, it's your bottom floor, it's everything that we're talking about. What we are looking for is, we are looking for chametz that is either a kezias, a significant size, like the size of a top of a teaspoon, or a whole edible food that potentially somebody might bump into. And this is, again, one of the fears, is that you don't want to have your house full of chametz and a person says that, I'm mevatel my chametz. I declare it all ownerless and I live among it. Really? Not such a good idea. Because we're so used to seeing, if you see a pretzel and it's hanging around on a kitchen counter, you might just pop it in your mouth. So if you see a Cheerio, it might be something that a kid would put into their mouth. So we try to get rid of all of that stuff. So as we're doing bedika and we're doing beers, we're searching for the chametz. Okay, this is going to be a recurring theme over here. As we are searching for the chametz, yes, and that might take place in the dark. It's something similar to this. That would be done on... Hang on one second. Somebody got that? Auntie's got it. Okay. That would be done on... So what we want to do is we want to get rid of all of those, all chametz of that size or of that chashivas. So again, what we're concerned about is something that might be the size of a teaspoon, a kezias, or whole, something that's whole and edible that could be eaten on its own, even if it's smaller than that. That is what we're looking for. So as we look through our homes and we look through drawers and closets, we are not cleaning the drawers. We are not cleaning our closets. That word is incorrect. You are not cleaning for Pesach. You are looking for chametz before Pesach. So if you open a drawer and it has shirts in it, and you pick up the shirts and you don't see any chametz, you could put them back down and you're good. Oh, but there might be a crumb here, or there might be a crumb, or it could be that one time there was a... That doesn't matter. Nobody cares. Those crumbs are insignificant. That is what, when we do bitul chametz, that is what we are getting rid of when we are mevatel chametz. Those crumbs are of complete, are absolutely not the thing that we are caring about. So the going through of a dresser, or the going through of a night table, or going through any of these things, yes, is it a wonderful time for spring cleaning? It is, but guess what? The spring started a while ago. You could have done that before Purim. But the idea of cleaning for Pesach is just looking for those chametz things. So again, all of those things are necessary. Large pieces of furniture. So if you have like a big bookcase or something, or even a refrigerator, an oven, where it doesn't move and it hasn't moved for more than 30 days. Even though there's the possibility that, how do I know that one time when somebody was eating Cocoa Puffs that one of them didn't bounce and fall and go behind it? Doesn't matter. Because if it hasn't moved in 30 days, then it's not something that one has to be concerned about. Again, one is going to do bitul chametz. Hopefully you're not going to move it during Pesach and have a kid find whatever's under there and eat it. That's hopefully not going to be a thing that happens. So the existence of the chametz over there is irrelevant. It's not going to be something that is accessed during Pesach. It is not going to infect your food. And as a result, it is not something that one needs to be concerned about. So really going through the house in general is a... It's a look over of everything. It's you know, you want to make sure that you're looking at all of the areas that kids or grandkids or adult kids might have been wandering through with food and leaving, again, significant pieces of food there, or that's where they hide their stash of whatever they're not supposed to be eating. That's where they put it. Find that stuff, get rid of it, and that's it. But again, it's not a matter of wandering around with a vacuum cleaner, making sure that every single dust or everything, any type of chametz crumb might, you know, you've evacuated from the premises. That is unnecessary. So that's number one. Moving to the kitchen and to the food eating areas, the rules change. This kind of way of just kind of like searching for the chametz and making sure that there's nothing significant around, that is for the main body of the house. But when we get to food areas, things change. Because even though commonly we have a concept called bittul. We have a concept in which we're told that if you have a minor amount of something, if you have less than a 60th, if there's chalent, and you have, you know, there and there's some sort of speck of like chocolate that may have like, you know, flaked off of something and fallen into the chalent, you can ignore it. If it's less than 1/60th of the chalent, forget about it. It's not halachically significant. We don't have to worry about such a thing. That is not true of chametz. Chametz is not bottle at all. There is no nullification size for it. And therefore, even small amounts of chametz are of concern, which is why we get more anxious and more, well, not necessarily anxious, but more concerned, doesn't have to be anxious, more concerned about the kitchen area and how to deal with these areas in which we have all of our food and food preparation and all of that stuff going on. So that area is going to take on like a whole different type of significance as to how we deal with it, how we clean it, and how we evacuate the different things that are in it. You had a question?
So yeah. My mother says that if you cook something before Pesach, then bittul does apply. Is that correct?
That is bidi'eved. If somebody cooks something before Pesach, there is the possibility of bittul applying. It's not something that we rely on. It's not something that we... That's not the way you operate. We don't operate that way with that in mind. Also, just keep in mind, another thing that does have bittul is kitnios. Kitnios, so those are things that are rice products, basically. I mean, that's how we mainly would have them in our houses. Those are things that do have a bittul on them. And therefore, if one does have like rice cakes or stuff like that floating around the house, it's not such a big deal. Even if somehow they get into food, it does not have much of an impact. And therefore, that's why those are not really... That's why people will utilize those things before Pesach. Okay. Just to make another point is that people who are going away, the idea that their kitchen is a super sensitive area, that gets lightened. That gets... Because there's no food preparation taking place in the kitchen. So the kitchen kind of just becomes like the rest of your house. There's a question. Do you own chametz? Are you going to bump into chametz and potentially eat it? So if your house is locked up and no one's in it and no one's accessing it for the entire time, so do you have to make sure that you are not an owner of chametz? Yes, you do. How do you do that? Well, getting rid of the basic chametz if you want. Selling your chametz could definitely be a way of just making sure that you're not an owner of any chametz. But the need to do any kind of kashering or any kind of like intense kitchen activity, not there anymore. It's just, it's not something that becomes necessary. Okay. Also, chametz that is rendered unfit for the eating of, the way Chazal describe it is, nifsal me'achilas kalev, that even a dog wouldn't be able to eat it, that is considered halachically destroyed chametz. So, in the event that someone has chametz in an area that they feel like they can't reach or they don't want to have to really put in the elbow grease to scrub, there is a way of just zapping it and making it that it is no longer considered viable chametz. And that is by using some sort of really poisonous caustic cleaner, like something like some sort of bleach cleaner or an ammonia-based cleaner, something that is not like it, if you use like, you know, very environmentally friendly and, you know, that kind of stuff, like, ain't gonna work because you just, you know, you're eating baking soda, so, you know, baking soda is baking soda. But it's gotta be something that's really, you know, unfriendly to the environment. So that kind of stuff is something that can destroy chametz. And therefore, if it's an area where it's going to be, okay, I could either scrub this thing for 20 minutes or I can take like, you know, 4 toothpicks and create some sort of like, you know, Rube Goldberg invention that's going to be able to scrape it out. Or I can take a thing of Windex and give it a little spritz, that's it. Just give it a spray and you're done. It's destroyed and you don't have to worry about it. And even if it would somehow fall into your food, it's still not You don't have to, I mean, you have to worry about the Windex, but you don't have to worry about the chametz part of things, just the poison part of things. Okay, so now let's walk through our kitchens. So in the refrigerator freezer areas, so the interior is something that we clean thoroughly. There are those that have a minhag, and this is, it's not that they have a minhag. Somebody once told me, I have a minhag to line my refrigerator, but not my shelves, in cabinets. I said, I guarantee you that minhag to line your refrigerator shelves doesn't go back that many generations. There weren't refrigerators back then. So the idea of lining shelves is a thing that there is a logic, there can be a logic to it. Number one is that if you put hot food down in your refrigerator, so let's say you have a shelf, a refrigerator shelf, and then you take a very hot pan and you would put it down on top of the shelf, and there would be chametz on the shelf, and the bottom of the pan would be wet, then potentially there could be an absorption of chametz that would go through the pan into your food. Not likely to happen, just saying. So it is something that there are those that they do it. If you do it, great. If you don't do it, also great. There is, if you're going to line your shelves just from a practical perspective, it can wreck your refrigerator if you do not create the airflow that's necessary for it to pass the cold air all over the place. So make sure to allow for proper air circulation. But if you don't, if you do not line your shelves, so then the only thing you have to like maybe be conscious of is do not put piping hot things directly on the shelves. Put a paper towel under them, or just, I think anyway, you're not supposed to put piping hot things in a refrigerator. It's not good for something. So now, as you're going through your refrigerator, what do you do if you see that there are crumbs in the back corner or in the edging between the shelf and the thing? What do? You take a little spray, you zap it, and it's all gone. It's not likely that that stuff is going to emerge on Pesach. If it's stuck there and there's no way for you to get it out, it also doesn't have a way to get itself out. So you're going to be okay. The handles, again, so if you're thinking about just like how a person maneuvers in the kitchen, so there are just certain things that we're always in contact with. So if a person is making challah dough and then they grab something from the refrigerator and they pull something out of a cabinet and they pick up the phone, just keep in mind, those are all things that have flour on them and they have chametz on them. What does one do? So again, clean them thoroughly. And if they get sprayed with a caustic cleaner, they are going to be okay and they cannot infect your things. There are those, again, that have a minhag to to wrap the handle with something, you can put foil around it, never stays. You could do other things to cover those types of things. That's fine. And again, it's all about do what makes life easiest for you. Calm for you. That's kind of the way to go. Okay, so the refrigerator and the freezer. The freezer also, same idea, is that most people don't put really piping hot things into them. So it involves going, looking through it, just get, clean out the crumbs that are inside of there, and you're good. And it doesn't have to involve a lot of elbow grease, making it chametz free. Yeah. So, unless you finish all your food on time, yeah. Right. Yeah. You don't have to. I mean, again, it's like the gasket gets dirty, so it is, it can be a collection point for certain things. So, but again, just a quick spray and a, and running a sponge over there or a paper towel with some Fantastic or Clorox on there, that will zap everything, that will clean everything. But again, it's not the type of thing where, like toothpicks, like I've seen people using toothpicks to clean. Like if you need a toothpick, it's probably not a necessary maneuver in order to have a kosher Pesach. Okay, next. Gas stovetops. Okay. So in a typical gas stovetop. What did you say, Noah? Okay. On a gas stovetop. So there are a number of parts to it. And nowadays, there are all kinds of different materials that are used. So we'll start with simple, more like old school, that the top of it is metallic. Let's say that the top of the stovetop is metal. The grates are grates, whatever those things are made of, some sort of metal also. Now, what does one do with the grates? Number one is you could just stick them into a self-cleaning oven while the self-cleaning cycle is running. Will that ruin the finish of the burners, of the grates? Possibly. Yes, it might. Therefore, if you don't want to ruin them, don't do that. Option number two is you can clean the grates and then put a blech on top of them. A blech is a sheet of metal. And then you turn on the burners underneath the blech, let them run for a good 10 minutes, and that will create enough heat underneath the blech that will kosher that entire, everything that's under there, it's getting koshered. Don't do all four burners at the same time. That's too hot. It's not good for anything. If neither of these methods are going to work for you, and you still want to, for whatever reason, you think that even that blech thing is going to wreck your burners or whatever. So there is another way to go that is less, I would say it's slightly less lechatchila, and that is that you can clean the grates very, very well with a caustic cleaner, with like a real heavy duty, like, you know, I don't know if EasyOff, I guess EasyOff, something like that, but like something really that's got some real power to it. Then do not use the grates for 24 hours and then put them into an oven at 550 degrees for at least an hour, maybe two, and let them bake like that. That is a lower level of kashering. It's not, there is something called Libun Gomor, which is the idea of turning, like the equivalent of putting a blowtorch to it to the point where it becomes red hot. And then whatever is absorbed inside of it becomes totally zapped and disappears. So that is the most absolute best way of kashering something. This is called Libun Kal. This is a lighter Libun. It's a different type of burning out. It works to a lesser extent. And it is, according to some poskim, acceptable for Pesach. Rav Moshe Feinstein was not a huge fan of this. If you've ever seen people who cover their grates with foil, it's because they did this. And then Rav Moshe held that even at that point, one would still should still cover it. It's not, I don't think that that's, that just as an aside, if you cover your grates with foil, I'm not recommending that because that also can cause safety things. Just letting you know, like I've seen that. No, you do not cover your grates with foil. That would be completely unnecessary. Hang on. So.
Option is just to order another set of grates.
No. Yeah. Shlomi's great. Shlomi's making the money. That's it. What? It's a great marketing tactic. You could also just buy them from the manufacturer, probably for less money. But anyway, the burner thing. So like where the fire comes out from, that is completely unnecessary to replace. That is there's nothing that gets hotter than that thingy. So like that would be like. You know, of course, that is self-kashered. The drip pans, the place underneath. Now, if you do the blech method, your drip pans are probably totally kosher. Like, I would venture to say that however hot your grates get, guess what else gets that? What's right underneath the grate is also getting that same container of heat. That's all happening right there. So that would be koshered. There are those that buy different, you know, drip covers. That's another thing that you can do. There are some, and many, many, many of the kosher organizations say that all you have to do is clean them. And it's very, very logical to say that there is no real way that that something that's cooking on the stovetop can get infected or affected by the stuff that's hanging out in the drip pans. So if you clean them well, like, the idea of covering them is unnecessary. And certainly if you do the blech method of kashering, those get self-kashered as well. No need to replace that. We'll talk about hang on. The rest of the, so I'm going old school right now. We'll get to the new school stuff soon, right? The rest of the stovetop, so let's say you have like that middle section area that's metal. So you have like the four, right, the old classic four burner thing. And then you have the strip of metal in the middle and then all around. That, again, you cover with foil, two layers. Two layers means that if anything drops on any of those areas, you don't have to worry about it. You pick it up. You could eat it. You could throw it back in the pot. You could do whatever you want. Just don't tell anybody about it. And all of that is that makes the rest of your stovetop fine. There's no need to kosher anything else on your stovetop. If you are doing this double layer of foil thing, then you're all good. There are no issues. The knobs, so you can clean them with, again, any high, ammonia bleach. Clean them well like that. Some people will cover them. It's not necessary. The reason to cover them, if you want to know the logic of covering them, is that if you have such, if they are located in a way that pots bump up against them, that food splashes on them, again, it's like, it's really not so likely that it's really almost impossible that it can infect what you have going on your stovetop. But if it makes you feel better to cover the knobs, hey, that's a very small amount of foil. So why not do it? The backsplash, yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're saying it'll take the writing off of it? Uh-huh. So then you can buy new knobs. Or Schleimy's knobs. Right? Bowman's knobs, right? Or what you could do is you could, so then it would be logical to just cover them. So then cover them. This is like something also keep in mind, is like when we cover things, especially if you double cover something, you're basically making whatever's underneath that double covering is like, it can't get you. So it can't do anything to you. So if there's something that you're just not sure that you want to clean, that you can clean, that this, double cover it and forget about it. It's okay. That is just something to keep in mind. So that would be, yeah, so if you have any nervousness about your knobs or something like that, just cover them and then you don't have to mess with the caustic cleaner. That's an interesting point. So you're saying any kind of writing on one of these things is obviously some sort of plastic. Right, it makes sense. Right, it makes sense. That's something's making those markings. Okay, thank you. Right. Well, she's saying you won't see the writing anyway because it's going to take it away. it's going to erase it. The backsplash behind your stove. So, again, you can just clean it very well with something, with some sort of harsh cleaner, or you can cover it. That's, you know, that the both of those are fine. The most important thing is not to cover the oven vent. Do not cover the vent. It will explode. Not a good thing. Which will kosher it, but that's that is not what you want on Pesach or before Pesach. If you have an electric stovetop, before we get to the single, to the glass or ceramic stovetops. An electric stovetop, same sort of idea, where you have like the four burners, metal coils. So the coils themselves, turn them on, 10 minutes, they glow, that kashers them. There is a type of burner that the GE ovens have called a SensiTemp burner, where they have like the little thing in the middle has like this little disc inside, like a little disc that what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to help control the temperature of those burners instead of just letting them run wild. And those middle things do not get hot enough to be self-kashered. Even though the glowing orange part gets self-kashered, the thing in the middle doesn't. And even if you keep a pot on it for an extended period of time and you let it run, it will never get hot enough to self-kasher. And therefore, the way to kasher those is to clean that part very well, which is a little bit of a pain in the neck, and then to wait 24 hours, pour boiling water over it, and then that kashers that middle disc inside of those things, inside of those sensors. That is how those are to be kashered. But again, the knobs and the backsplash and the drip pans, all the same exact thing as the gas stovetop. Yeah?
Can we go back to the advanced vents?
So the vent could be found in two places, I think. One is that in the back, on the back burner, of usually on the right, is going to be a tube. Now that vent itself, when you kosher the inside of your oven, that becomes koshered along with it. The heat gets involved in there also. It's there, and if you would somehow put foil or something over it, it would just not allow for the heat to ever escape or the steam to ever escape from the inside of your oven. That would be bad. So now there are other times where it could be that if you have like a stovetop and then there's like a panel in the back, sometimes the vent comes off of the, you know, like underneath that back panel, there's a vent over there. And that is one that's more likely for people to not realize it's there and then to cover it by mistake. So if you're putting foil over the backsplash and you're not allowing for space for all of that steam to escape from your oven, that could be dangerous. So just keep in mind where your vent is and just make sure that it does not end up covered with the way we cover our kitchens. It will be. It's not about, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're good. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So on the electric, right, in the electric stovetop, so you can lift up like that front, that top panel, and then there's the area under there that has like stuff that ends up collecting over the year. Again, that is not really problematic. Is it a good idea to just clean it out and just like to, you know, to at least spray it with something? Yeah, it pays to zap it, but it's the equivalent of the underneath. Basically, the concept is that when you have, the only time that we would be concerned, let's say, that something would get absorbed or come from underneath a pot and get it and do something to it is if you had some sort of collection of stuff underneath it, and then it would get heated, it would turn into vapor, and then come up and attack your pot. That would be the possibility. But fascinating, Chazal talk about how the fire, which is like the heating element, is any vapor that comes to it gets pulverized right away. So they understand that the vapor is never going to really pass through the fire to get to your pot. So really you're sort of protected from anything that comes from the bottom, which is why we can have stoves and I could use something for milchix and then maybe something spilled over and maybe there's a little bit something in the drip pan. Do I have to worry before I put a chicken soup up there? Do I have to worry about that? So again, is it a good idea to always like clean out the drip pan if in between spills? Yeah, it is. But if worse comes to worse and something like that happened and the while the burner is on, do we have to worry that the vapor went and did something to your pot? Not really. Bidyevet. So that's kind of like the theory of having not being super worried about what's going on underneath. That's like double underneath. But yes, it's a good idea to clean that area. Okay, now nowadays there are more of these glass stovetops / ceramic stovetops, and there are two types of models. One is you have like a continuous grate over the top. You have a couple of places or five places or something, depending on the style of the stove, where you have burners that come out from this single unit stovetop. But the grates are basically continuous over the whole thing. So those grates need to be koshered. Anything that... So kosher the grates in whichever way works for you. Then you have... Then what do you do about the surface underneath it? If it's glass or ceramic, to cover it is going to break it. That it cannot stand the intensity of the heat that is going to be created by having that covered by foil. But the truth is that as long as you clean it, what exactly is the concern? There's not like a tremendous concern that anything is going to, you know, rise up from that stove, from that smooth top and attack your pot. Your pot is raised up on a grate. The way to deal with it would be to clean it well and, you know, kasha your grates. If anything would fall through the grates onto that, you know, onto the ceramic or the glass stove, then throw that out. That area has not been truly koshered, and therefore the food that would land there would not be edible, but may not be edible anyway. You don't know how people usually treat something like that. That's one type of stovetop. The other type of newfangled stovetop, which isn't so newfangled anymore, it's probably 20, 25 years old, but is the glass top that has the, you know, the burners, but everything is encased underneath this glass. That's something that, again, it can't be covered. The areas immediately above the glow, where it's glowing, are kosherable technically, but only those areas are being koshered. So even as you turn it on and it glows and you let it go for, you know, you leave it on for 10, 15 minutes, that's great for that area right above it. Scrape off all of the, you know, all of the stuff that's on top of it. So if you can get that pristine, that's koshered. A lot of times our pots extend a little bit beyond where that is. Well, then Nen's touching an area that's not koshered. A lot of times a spill will come over the side and then bleed onto an area that's not koshered yet. That also is going to possibly infect and affect our pots. So the thing to do there would be to get these things that raise your pot up even a little bit off of the surface. So then in that way, your pot is not touching the unkoshered glass. Your pot is not having a spill that's going to run onto the unkoshered glass and connect back to your pot. So they sell these things. They are, I think they're called heat diffusers. So, which basically is another way of saying it makes the heat less when it gets to your pot. So it does make the stove run a little less efficiently, but it is a way of lifting the pot off that glass and then making them something that can be used. But again, clean the top of it as well as you can. That's the way to do it. Okay, that is the stovetop. Okay. Yeah, so the backsplash where the dial is and everything. So again, some people would put some foil over it. Some people would. It depends, like, if you have to see. Right, oh, they want to have the numbers on it. Right. If you cover the digital display, then it's like, really, what are we having tonight? Potluck, right? So that's the type of thing. We're like, just clean it very well and try not to let things touch it. Because if something touched it and then touched it, so like you get... Yeah, the vent is a lot of times under that, right? Right under that, yeah.
But is Windex?
Yeah, Windex. Windex has ammonia. You know, Clorox has bleach. All those things are considered Nifsa Meyachal Eskalif. Yeah, yeah. H.
Yeah. So you really can't the area between
them. Right. So washers or trivet or something, people do recommend putting something, I saw that, maybe the Sarkis says it, They say to put something down. It depends how you normally function with your stove. If it's the type of place where you normally put things down, so then, yeah, you should be afraid that maybe I'm going to, by mistake, push it off of its, you know, where it is, and then it's going to land on this other part. So if you can devise a way to just keep space between it and your pot, that's, yes, it's a good idea. It's a good idea. Yeah. Yeah.
So underneath it is stainless steel.
Right.
Can you treat that? In other words, if you put foil on that, it gets a fire hazard. There's no place to put it. Can you clean that, and then if anything goes through the grate, just decide it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Yes.
So you don't need to, if you clean it with plastic, and you don't need to cover that with it.
Correct.
Unless you want to.
You're good, yeah. But if anything falls, then sayonara. Right. That's it. Okay, a self-cleaning oven is something... So self-cleaning ovens are defined as those ovens that clean themselves with intense heat. Nowadays, many ovens don't do that. It's not considered to be environmentally friendly to have such intense heat. It also happens to be not so good. Ovens, I think that a lot of people complain that, like, they run it, you know, X amount of times, and then one of the heating elements, like, blows itself out. So that's also possible. So it's the type of thing where you only have to self-clean your oven one time for it to be koshered. It's not that you have to self-clean it, and then that was the preparatory self-cleaning. And then, like, then now is the real self-cleaning, and I didn't do it l'shmo. So now I have to do it again, and I have to do... So a person... really only needs to do the self-cleaning one time. And if you can get 10 times out of your oven, then it'll last for 10 years, and good for you. So the oven has to be able to get up to at least... There are different posts can have different numbers for this, but I've heard 700 degrees is the required shear. I've heard that Rav Heineman holds it has to be like 1,000 degrees, so he has like a whole different take on how all these things work. But most ovens get up well above 700 when they are on their self-cleaning cycle. I recommend that a person use whatever the standard cycle of self-cleaning is, that should suffice. So to go, like, you know, a lot of times, let's say it's a 3-hour cycle, let's say. So you could reduce it to 2, or you could put it up to 4. So you could keep it at 3. It happens to be that you could visually tell whether it worked. You can look inside, and it should just be a pile of ash and nothing else inside of it when it's done. That is...
You might say, if it reached 1,000 degrees, like,
yeah.
700 degrees,
yeah.
Even if it reached that for...
That's it. Yes.
So what's the mileage? So the 3/2?
The question is that if it has a... What? Right. The question is, does it get to... If you lower the timing of it, is that... When they say that it gets to this temperature, they mean if you run the standard self-cleaning cycle. There could be that if you have, like... The way they're thinking about it is that you want your oven to get clean. They don't care if it gets koshered. So in their mind, when they have these steam cleaners and it gets to 212 degrees, you know, 214 degrees, and it's creating steam inside, and they have a special treated interior of the oven, and everything's melting off of it, to the non-Jewish world, that's a self-cleaning oven. We need the ovens to get to this temperature. So when they tell us that the manufacturers say that it'll get to, you know, 800 degrees if you run the self-clean cycle, they mean if you run it the way it's stomp programmed into the machine. So if you lower it, now it could be you can call them and they'll tell you, yeah, it gets there after X amount of time, and we have an engineer who figured it out, and this is how it works. Great. If you know that for a fact, that's wonderful. If you don't know it for a fact, then you can't necessarily take a guess on that. And the need to go in and say, like, let me jack it up for an extra hour, like, that's also unnecessary, because if they tell you that it happens. So you can believe them. You can take them for their word. Yeah.
How do I know if I have one of these new ovens that are sold?
The only one that I heard is problematic is I heard this a number of years ago, probably 5-6 years ago. I heard that there were some newer kitchen aids that were not getting up to that number. So I've heard, but then I know some people who called the manufacturer and they said that no, it gets the like the and they asked them what it gets to and they said it gets a good 750, whatever. But the way I heard it was that there was a certain kitchen aid that was only that they said, oh, we keep the heat down, it's only 650 degrees. So then, like, you know, that triggered in people's minds, uh-oh, it's not quite getting to 700. That's a problem. But I'm not aware. I have not heard since then that this is really, like, a problem that has, like, you know, taken over the world, you know, like that this is now something that people need to be super concerned about. So I would not really be overly concerned that your oven doesn't do that. If you feel like it gets really, really hot, then, you know, whatever your oven is set for, just do that. Press self-clean, walk away. What? No need. Oh, one second. We're talking about it. Hang on. Yeah.
So if your self-cleaning oven also has convection, then is it also a convection oven?
I would put it like this. I believe, that a self-cleaning oven that has convection, I think that if you self-clean it, and it self-cleans with intense heat, that it's okay, but I think that maybe you should not use the convection during Pesach. But you might want to call the Starkei about that. Convection ovens basically have a fan in them. Yes. So the way the Starkei describes koshering a self-convection oven involves spraying Easy Off on the fan while it's running. I don't know what convection does, but it ain't worth it. I'll tell you that. I'm not taking that chance. I mean, now, unless maybe it makes sense that you could do that and then it wouldn't be a problem. Yeah, and then how do you get it out? Like, you're supposed to, like, get rid of the Easy Off after you're done. I don't know. So I don't get what they mean when they say that. It could be that if you call them, they will explain it to you and they say that, then it'll sound simple. Yeah, no, that's at least 15 years old that they've been saying that about the convection. Yeah. I think convection ovens are more prevalent now that it's part of a regular oven, built into a regular oven now than they used to be. So I think it used to be like a different, microwaves and convections went together. Yeah, ask them what to do about that. Ask them. Yeah, hang on one second. So self-cleaning ovens, just definition, it means self-cleaning through heat. Now, what do you do? The interior and the racks, if you are willing to put your racks through that, because there are some racks that people don't want to put through that, the interior and the racks all become koshered through it. The door is a little bit of a different story. It should be cleaned well with Easy Off. So we're talking about the door. So you open the door, like the surface of the door. And then the area right around the gasket, just spray that with Easy Off and, you know, knock it off and, you know, and just rinse it off.
Insulation.
Yeah, so where the door meets the oven, like all around that area. So it's cleaning the gasket on the door side of things. That's where the gasket usually is. And then there's the part where it meets the frame of the interior. So that area you spray with Easy Off, you rinse it off. It does not need, I want to make this point. You do not need to use a lot of elbow grease for that. It's not like, you know, you need to scrub that, like, you know, till, you know, your fingers fall off. That's not the goal over here. The goal is to spray it, rinse it off, and then the combination of doing that plus the self-cleaning should really get it clean. The issue is, like, if you just want to think it through, the issue is that the heat that is so intensely hitting the inside is not necessarily pounding the door with the same intensity. It's venting out, and therefore it's not getting the same intensity of koshering in the gasket and on the door. So therefore, even though we could say that there's real libun going on inside the oven, the door of the oven may only be a lighter form of kashering taking place, which would therefore require it really being, so by putting easy off on that, you're really killing any form of chametz that's there. Like, you are destroying it in this other way of just like it's absolutely destroyed. Anything that is really embedded in the walls, we're not super concerned about. Some people will actually line the inside of the door with foil. Others will not. It's something that I've so brought down by a few poskim, but I know many poskim that say, don't bother doing that with the lining the inside of the door. People have asked me if they need to wait 24 hours after cleaning the inside of the door before running the self-clean cycle. No, you don't. I don't think you need to do that. This is just something that we do, like, you know, as a good extra step. Clean door, run self-clean. That's it. Yeah. Okay, so the oven, the interior of the oven does not have to take a lot of time if you do it this way. Okay? So now, let's say you have a standard oven, or you are unwilling to do the whole self-clean thing, you don't want to put your oven through that. Or you have one of these ovens that have Aqualift or steam clean or some other form of cleaning, which again, it may really get the interior of your oven clean, but that's not clean is not kosher. That's the two different things. So the interior, the racks, the door, they need to be cleaned extremely well with Easy Off. It has to be a caustic cleaner. It's got to be like a real thing. A lot of times, like on these steam clean things, they don't want you messing with the interior of the oven with one of these caustic cleaners because it ruins their finish that they've put on it. That's problematic. You have to really use something that is caustic, and it should really be something like that. If a stain remains after treating it once, so if let's say you spray the whole inside with Easy Off, you let it sit for an hour or two, you wipe it off, and then you go and you see, there's still stuff there. So one method is pull out the screwdriver, start scraping it, and do stuff like that. No, you don't have to do that. Rinse it off, then find all those spots that you feel like are still inside your oven, spray them again, wait another couple of hours, and then if they're still there after that second spray of Easy Off, then just like the cockroaches, they are going to survive nuclear war, and you do not have to worry about those kinds of things. After that, so that is the cleaning of the oven. But again, it means that it's kind of annoying, I would say, on the shelves, because like you have to, like, you know, you just gotta make sure you hit all of the wires, you know, on both sides. And then wait 24 hours. After that 24 hours, you broil a gas oven for an hour to 2 hours. Best to do 2 hours. Broil is the best way to do on a gas oven. In an electric oven, 550, an hour to 2 hours also. That's the way to do it. If you feel like your interior of your stove, of your oven, is so clean that, like, you know, that and you've used only the most natural of products, you baking soda and vinegar, not chametz stick of vinegar, but baking soda and vinegar, and you've managed to get everything super clean, then, you know, that, do you need to use a caustic cleaner? I guess not. You're taking a chance that if there's a mashu of chametz in there, then whatever. And then you would still have to do the burnout process, but there's no need to use a caustic cleaner if you can pull that off. But you really need to be 1,000,000,000% sure, percent sure that there are zero problems and zero stains in there. Okay, the hood over the oven is a place that has a large collection of stuff on it and in it, like the area right above where your stove is. And one can clean that. You can go ahead and clean it if you want. It may just be simpler for your life to cover it. So covering is, that's kind of like up to a person what you want to do. But if there's, like, a lot of times there are mesh things and all kinds of stuff like that, you can actually, if you soak them in like Windex overnight, they will come out like squeaky clean afterwards. But you gotta, you know, cleaning that really will involve a little bit of anti-gravity elbow grease, so may be in a person's best interest to cover that. If you have a broiler, a griddle, any kind of like insert like that, or thing that you put on top of your stove, those are very difficult to kasher. Just close them up, sell them for Pesach. Warming drawers, not kasherable. Convection ovens with difficulty, as we talked about. Outdoor grills are also very difficult to kasher. It is possible, but may not be the easiest thing to do. So there are instructions. If you go to the Starkey book, go on the Starkey website, you can find instructions of how to do it. But it seems hard. You agree? Andy? Yeah, okay. It just seems like a onerous thing to do. Microwave. There are different kashrus organizations have different shitas on this as to how kasherable microwaves are for Pesach. I personally do not recommend it. You can grab yourself a, $30, $40 microwave. And what do you microwave anyway on Pesach? Come on. It tastes so good. Anyway, but it's not super, different, again, different places have different shitas about that. Okay, let's move to the sink now. A metal sink is something that is kasherable. The way to kasher it is to clean it very, very thoroughly. Pour ammonia or something like that down, or Drano, down the drain. What you're trying to avoid is the inevitable pre-Pesach backup that will go, and then you'll be like, oh no, what if there was some chametz in my pipes? Just that way you don't have to think about it. Just put something nasty down there, and then you don't have to worry about anything. Do not use hot water for 24 hours, and then you take a kosher le-Pesach pot of boiling water, and you pour water on every single spot in the sink. That is, it's not something that you can pull off with one kettle or one pot. You really are supposed to be getting every single spot on the sink with a direct pour. That's how it's supposed to go. So if you have, and the Starkey recommends, like if you have some sort of square or oblong pan, that is the easiest way to get the whole side kasher, because then it's instead of pouring into a single spout, it's pouring wide, and then you're able to go up and down against a wall, because you're trying to get up and down the walls, and then the bottom of it as well. Is it what? Yeah, but no, you're not going to be able to boil that. But you can buy, like, they sell these, they sell square pots. They sell basically square. Technically top to bottom, but it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter. The knobs, it's best to, if they're metal, first of all, check if they're metal. Not every knob is metal, believe it or not. Sounds weird, but like sometimes they make them plastic. Really. But if it's metal, they are kasherable. Some people just like get nervous that maybe something's going to touch it and this and that. You can cover them. It's also like it's not a bad thing to do. The aerator. Yeah, they're not. What do you call them? Oh, sorry, the lever. Sorry. You can kasher the lever or the knob or the, and again, it's like pouring hot water over the top of that should suffice. What? They're all plastic? Even if it's plastic, so. Say it again? Yeah. So a lot of these sink parts, if you call your company, it might be too late, but like might be too close to Pesach to get it. But if you call the company, they will give you like a lot of these parts for free. Like they don't like they'll just be like you'll tell them that like no, it's fine, it works fine. I just want another one of it, and they'll just send it to you. So if you have like some sinks have like a pull down like sprayer. So if you call them, so first of all, the aerator is something that one should try to replace. So if you have like a pull-down thing, so if you have a sink, so the faucet comes over the top, hooks over. Now, that area, people get nervous koshering it. Sometimes they touch things to it. How nervous do you have to be about that? So again, we usually kosher it by pouring things over it. A lot of people will, again, put some foil over the whole arc of things. That's fine. The aerator should be replaced. They are replaceable. If you think you can't get yours off, you're wrong. They come off. You have to have some of them need a special key. I happen to have a whole set of them. I happen to have two sets of them because whatever, it's a long story. But that's an Amazon thing. But they will come off and you can replace them. And sometimes, again, the sink company will just give you a whole bottom piece if you have a whole separate piece that pulls out. If you have a sprayer, it's really, you should not use that on, instead of trying to kasher the hose and figure that out, just don't use it on Pesach. Leave it in. You can pour hot water over the top of that. You can cover it. You could just accept upon yourself not to touch anything to it during Pesach, and anything piping hot to it on Pesach, and you don't really have to worry about it. If you also have a lot of times you have water filters and Instahots, we have all kinds of gadgets that come off of the side of our sinks. Those are things that if you have an instant hot, you can, now this is the way they describe doing this is also don't try this at home, kids, even though they're telling you to do this at home. Turn on the hot water and then pour hot water over it. Well, what is my thumb doing? But so hit it with something else and then, and then pour hot water over it. But those are things that you can technically, those gadgets on the side, they can be kashered by pouring hot water over them. Things with hoses and extendable parts that especially that are plastic and are snaky, just leave them in, leave all those things in place during Pesach, yeah. The faucet, the order of operations is it really doesn't matter. You can do the faucet first, you can do the sink first. It's not of tremendous relevance. It doesn't really matter. It's not going to go that if I've kashered my sink and then I'm going to pour over my faucet, so then I'm having all the chametz come out of my faucet and it's going to land in my sink and then get stuck in my sink and now my sink is going to become chametz again. Why can you or why can you not? No, while you're kashering it, they say to run hot water through it, just so that the whole interior gets heated from the inside and the outside. It just creates more heat. That's why they said to do that. Yes. Both. So while you're pouring hot water over the faucet, they do say to turn the hot water on. That's just creating more heat. Your faucet is really a tube. So if there's hot water running through it, it will enable the heat to get from all sides into the metal. That's really, you're pouring from the tap, but you want as much heat as possible to be hitting this thing at the same time. I think that's the logic of that. All of this stuff is after 24 hours. After 24 hours. Yes, clean, wait, after 24 hours. Now, there's always that guy who just you're watching them. It's 23 and a half hours have passed. And then somebody wanders over with a bowl of cereal and pours it into the sink. And you're what are you doing? Fear not, even though that person deserves punishment, nonetheless, your sink is fine because it's really an issue of hot stuff going into the sink within that 24 hours. So, yeah, that person will strike, right? But you don't have to. That's not the end of the world. A what? On the side. So just clean that very well. Try to kasher. Yeah. If you have an enamel sink, anybody have an enamel sink? That's not a thing anymore, is it? No. Okay. My mother still has an enamel sink. In Manhattan, they still have enamel sinks. Yeah. In a certain way, life is easier. It's just what do you do? Nothing. All right. You cover it. Okay, counters. So pure marble or granite are kasherable according to all opinions. These things that are composites of other stuff are very questionable about their kasherability, not recommended. I happen to think that The way to kasher it is to take boiling hot water, pour it over again, over every part of every surface of the countertop. There's another way of doing it where you pool up water on the counter, you take an iron, and you let the water bubble under the iron. That's another way of kashering. My personal feeling about this is that it's 8 days. It's 8 days, people, right? What are we doing on the counters already? Just cover them with something nice and life will go on. I have these beautiful counters and this and that. Like, yes, you have beautiful life also, and live it. So the idea of pouring water over everything, people always get like, well, it's so much water, and it's so much this, and it's so much that, and it's so much that. You're right. I agree. Just cover it. And if you cover it, so then it's not such a big deal. Keep in mind that, according to many opinions, if you do pour hot water over your counters and kosher them, if hot food, if let's say a piece of schnitzel would fall out of like a frying pan and land on the counter, it's still not okay. It really only helps for things like putting pots down on the counter. But if food actually makes contact with it, it's problematic because it's a different type of, like, there are different levels of kashering that we talked before. There is something that has intense heat of contact. You're not doing that. We're really only pouring hot water over it. That's iroi. Iroi is not really it's not the most powerful form of kashering, and therefore doesn't really take care of everything. So I am a proponent of the lazy method of, not actually, whatever. The first time you make counter carver is not so lazy, but whatever. Okay, anyway, I am a proponent of using some sort of heat-proof, waterproof material and covering it that way, but the same way that you kasher your sink, any kind of kasherable material that is your countertop can be kashered in the same way. Just quickly running around the kitchen. Dishwasher, not kasherable. Tables. If you have a table pad, some people flip it over. Some people, like, you can clean it really well. You cover it with a plastic. You take a couple of plastic tablecloths. You go to the dollar store. You invest in a couple of those guys. Not the dollar store anymore, whatever they cost now. You put a couple of layers of that down, and it's waterproof and heat-proof enough that your table is now, you're not going to have your things that are on top of your table affected by whatever may have been absorbed in your table. Foil is fine also. I just find that, like, I don't know, like, I used to use, I think we used to do a lot of foil stuff, and, like, I just think that the plastic stuff just somehow just goes easier, goes smoother, it's faster. It's just, yeah. It's quicker, cheaper. No. All these counters, if you are going to cover your counters, don't do anything to them. You don't have to boil them. You don't have to do anything. You can clean them if you want. You don't even have to do that, technically. Not recommending, whatever. The tablecloths and towels are, if one launders them in hot with detergent, that is acceptable. That's fine. And the Starkey is, like, totally good with that. And I'm not just Starkey. Like, a lot of places are good with it. I asked them once, I said, why do you say that Tide is kosher lePesach? Like, what are you doing that for? And they said, for people who do this, so you want to make sure that detergent, like, if they're really using these things with food, so then, you know, okay, you know, I heard that. But many people have separate ones for Pesach. They just invest in towels and oven mitts for sure, stuff like that. Garbage cans, just clean well. Again, we are worried about food infecting, you know, stuff that's chametz, that's around our kitchen infecting our food. Not likely that something on or about your garbage can is going to affect your food, and you certainly don't want to admit that it would. Outdoor trash cans, we talked about that. A lot of people will try to clean them, just throw a little bleach inside of them, and that makes them okay. The walls above counters. Why? Because it makes people feel better. Yeah. The walls above the counters and the underside of cabinets are things that, again, are, if you have a mixer and you make challah and it whips up like all kinds of flour. So yeah, it could get on the walls and it can get on the underside of a cabinet. Two options: clean it well with a caustic cleaner, you're good. Cover the underside of a cabinet with some foil, and you're good, or plastic, whatever. And both are reasonable options. Do what works for you. Light switches, doorknobs, again, in high chametz areas, just clean them well with a caustic cleaner. A phone is a good idea. People have their phones everywhere. It's a good idea to like take off your thing and just clean it well with a caustic cleaner. Chairs. People go bananas over their chairs. Unless you stack your chairs like you're in a bar or something where you turn them upside down onto the table with your food on it, you really don't have a concern of your chair affecting your food unless you eat backward. So therefore, like, the chairs don't have to be like this real heavy duty cleaning thing. So just look at them. Some people like to get into the cracks of them, but again, how is that going to become a problem? It's usually just like little tiny crumbs that are in the break between the cushion and the back of the chair. So you don't have to vacuum that out. It's not like people go wild about that, but it's not like a real thing. Just, if you want to spray them, spray them. But otherwise, that's fine. If anybody has braces or a bite plate or anything like that, that's the type of thing. I gave a share about that last year to the men before Pesach. It's online somewhere. But just those are types of things. Clean well. Some people will not have hot chametz with them for 24 hours before this man of Isser. That's a nice thing to do. Most people don't have super hot things in their mouth on purpose. That's not doesn't feel good. What? Yeah, maybe. I'm saying, just if it's that hot, then it's not usually what you're gardening for. The candlestick tray, a lot of people, if you keep it on your table, so again, it's like type of thing. Clean it very well, and it's okay. Rings. It is a good idea to kosher rings. People do touch very hot things on purpose, not on purpose, but throughout the year, and then you can come back in contact with very hot things with your hands. So it's not a bad idea for a person to take their rings, boil up a little tiny pot of water, toss them in for a second. It cleans them pretty well. And otherwise, you definitely have to clean them very well. Some people will kosher them, and not a bad idea to do that. Washing cup by the kitchen, replace it. Washing cup in the bathroom, don't need to replace it. Water coolers and all kinds of like water filters like that, like independent water filters, just clean them well. Not to use the hot water side on Pesach, I wouldn't use, but if you have a cool water thing, that's fine. If you have a water filter that attaches to a faucet, like a Brita type of thing, or there's another brand I've got, Pure, right, like that. So that's the type of thing where if it's really on the whole year, like if it's been on since before last Pesach, so then when you kosher your sink, just kosher with that thing on it. If it's the type of thing where you take it on and put it off every so often, so then when you kosher your sink, take it off, kosher your sink, and then put on a new one for Pesach. It is the type of thing that's getting splashed all the time by all kinds of chametz stuff. So it is in a sensitive place, and you should make sure that it's cleaned and koshered if that's a thing. Drawers and cabinets that will be used on Pesach, as we mentioned before, some people definitely clean them very well, caustic cleaner. Some people will line them. Again, not a halachic necessity, but some people will. Drawers and cabinets that will not be used on Pesach. So they don't need to be cleaned. They just need to be sealed, sold, labeled. Make sure that they're labeled well. I actually know somebody that dealt with a shaila where somebody pulled, it was Erev, the last days of Pesach, and they pulled a roast out of the oven, and they looked down at their hands, and they saw that they were wearing their chametz tikka oven mitts that were full of flour and all other kinds of goodies. And what happened is that they just, like, you know, it's force of habit, is that you just go to the cabinets that you used to going to, and they pulled out the gloves that they're used to pulling out, and they didn't realize. The stuff is supposed to be like put away in a way where like there's a some sort of a seal where it's not just like some invisible piece of scotch tape that's, you know, that kind of fell off already after the first day of Yom Tov, holding it down without any kind of like real visible like chametz is here type of, you know. So it should be something that's visible and kind of like stops you, preventative from getting to it. So so do those cabinets really have to be cleaned out? No. Like, they don't really need to be cleaned out. If there's chametz in there, it's fine. As long as it's not something that's going to fall out of the cabinet during Pesach onto your stuff, don't worry about it. But make sure that the thing is, that the areas are, like, kind of cordoned off. Mixers, blenders, food processors, sandwich makers, toaster ovens, coffee makers, even urns, even though there are ways maybe of kashering those, the urns. Other stuff, totally not kosherable, put them away. Just, you don't have to clean them, but just put them away, seal them off, and they're gone for Pesach. An urn is something, and a kurig also is something that could maybe technically be kosherable. Not recommended. Again, it is, it's worth getting an urn for just Pesach, and just to not have to deal with those kinds of issues. Otherwise, the remaining chametz that one has, you seal away. And that's pretty much it. If a person is going away for Pesach, so we mentioned this before, it's like the whole kitchen intensity is not necessary. It's not necessary to intensely go through one's kitchen like that. It's like the rest of your house. Chametz that you're going to sell is kind of put away. It's behind something. It's in a, you know, your toaster oven is a toaster oven. Okay, so do you have to put it away? No, not really. You're going away. That's it. No one's going to use it. No one's going to have it. It's whatever chametz is in there is sold. It's not accessible. Even if somebody is staying in your house, you could just tell them, like, hey, listen, kitchen's off limits. Or you can say that, like, the kitchen is not Pesachdik. So walk in there at your own risk. Can they use the sink to, you know, wash the tails of dying? Yeah, they could do that if they want. But otherwise, that is not something that you got to, you don't have to bend yourself out of shape on that. Otherwise, that basically covers it. Next week, for a much shorter shiur, at 8 o'clock, I hope to have a shiur that will cover the basics of, like, right before Pesach, like, Erev Pesach, preparation, halachos that are, like, you know, preemptive halachos for preparing for the Seder. Just, I think, a bunch of things that not everybody's always fully aware of that they should, that can make their lives easier and smoother. Yeah. It's all, so I would say, put it like this. It's all permissible as far as like making sure that you have, you can sell your chametz like that. You're selling your chametz. You are also making it, you're trying to, number one, label it so that if the guy wants to come and get his chametz, he can come and get it. That's A. B, making it that you are not going to, by mistake, take it. Like, you don't want to run into this problem that the oven glove lady, or actually it was a guy, that guy had. You don't want that to happen to you. So if you have a way of, like, sealing something in a bag and you're going to triple knot the top of it so that you have to, like, you know, use a scissor to get into it, that's fine. And then it's inside your fridge and it has a sticky note with the word chametz on it. That's good. That's, you know, that's put away. That's good enough. Yeah.
Whatever, so there's going to be thrown out some stuff.
honestly, we don't need to do that. That's not a need. That's the type of thing where, like, people get nervous that they have it. So it's just a way of making people feel like, okay, you're good. Yeah.